Hey, how's it going?
Good, how's it going?
Very well. I appreciate you joining. Before we get into it, so there's no context. It's just a conversation, but I wanted to give you the opportunity to use this platform just to promote yourself more because you're trying hard. And when I watch your streams, you do it really well. You work really hard. You obviously put the effort in it. You've over a short period of time accumulated quite a bit of equipment and put in a lot of effort, more effort than I would say most do, even more popular streamers. A lot of people seem jaded, but you seem to keep going. So I felt like this would be a good opportunity for people that may not know you to see you and just expand your audience a little bit. Do you want to explain to people who you are or what you do?
I'm a part-time content creator. Yes, nowadays is what I would call it. Both doing Twitch streaming 4 times a week and putting out 2 videos a week on
What's
YouTube.
your schedule for people that want to check out your stream?
I stream at 12:30 a.m. Eastern, Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and then release videos on Wednesday and Saturday.
Great. So streaming seems like a thankless profession. It seems like it's a lot of work for a little in return. So what made you want to get into streaming?
Well, it kind of is and kind of isn't. It's the weird, I almost want to say catch 22 that it's streaming, is that it can go anywhere from zero effort up to large productions, and it really depends on where people fall on the spectrum. The main reason I wanted to get into it is Twitch streaming is got this weird vision from the outside people have that it's just people playing video games and not doing anything. Like, oh, people are going and just watching someone play video games. But in reality, a lot of why people stick around on Twitch is that it's almost more like a relationship of being in a room with someone, being there, watching them play video games and just talking about your life, or being part of a group conversation. And I find that so satisfying, being part of that and being able to create that is really nice too. There's people who come into my stream and they just want someone to talk to, someone to talk about like what they're doing, their game, or what there's going on in their life. And it's just fascinating to be part of that and to help develop it.
It's a very thoughtful answer. I'd agree with you. People looking from the outside in, they don't see the depth that the relationship that you have with streamers. Because I mean, a lot of you guys stream for quite a long time, like upwards of 3, 4 hours at a time. And when you're doing that, especially a few times a week, you really get to know a person. You almost feel like you know them personally because you're spending so much time with them. You run out of things to talk about related to the games, and I mean, some people have done it for so many years, like a Soda Poppin', or I mean, XQC is now quite popular. But you eventually just start talking about life or other things, and you start really seeing relationships develop and memes just within the vacuum of that small community. And it's interesting because I don't wonder if Twitch realized what they were building when they first did that. I feel like maybe it was just more superficial people, like it's just a platform for people to play video games, but really it developed into something so much more. And the communities are, they're like, to me, they seem more genuine than a lot of communities on other platforms like Twitter or YouTube or Facebook, even with people that you know in real life. Like people feel more connected to streamers than they do some people they know, next door.
And sadly, part of the, I don't know if I want to say problem. One of the odd parts about it is the bigger you get as a streamer or on Twitch, it almost becomes less of that just from the standpoint of if you've got, 1,500, 2,000 people watching you, it's hard, especially on the streamer side, to know all those people and necessarily recognize them all the time. So the odd satisfaction people get out of it becomes not quite as deep the bigger you get, just from the nature of how many more people are there. But you still have that benefit of those people then almost have more viewers to then create those relationships with, throw back their jokes and memes, and they create their own little self-sufficient community, even if the streamer can't develop as much of a personal touch in it. So it's kind of nifty how it starts with more of the streamer viewer relationship. As it grows, the viewers then connect with each other and start forming the community alongside the Twitch streamer.
Yeah, it's interesting because they definitely do form communities, and it's almost, and like, even though people will watch multiple streamers, they still identify with a specific streamer and that specific community, the inside jokes and the memes of that specific streamer. It's not as tribalism in a sense, but it's interesting to see it like unfold. And Twitch has developed so much in such a short period of time, and I think it's mostly the social aspect that's allowed it to get to that point.
Yeah, it's the big claim to fame with live streaming. It's once again why people go to it. YouTube's are great. YouTube videos are great, and like I said, I make some of those too, and I watch a bunch of them. But you don't get that direct connection with the person. It's that person talking to a camera or that person talking to another person. With Twitch streaming, the fact that that person can react to you and in live time you can affect them, it's so unique to it. And it's something that Twitch seems to recognize. They just don't seem to recognize some other problems that they have.
What are some of the other problems, if I may ask?
The biggest issue with Twitch is there's no discoverability. So if, as far as a Twitch streamer side of things, for the viewer, it's not as big a deal. You drop in, you know, I want to watch someone play Satisfactory, for example, and then you find someone or you go through them. But from a streamer standpoint, there's no way for you to find me. Like, I have to be streaming at that time, the specific game you're looking at, for there to even be a chance. And depending on the game, especially stuff like World of Warcraft or Call of Duties and stuff, there's so many people that unless you're somewhat of a decent size, you won't be seen at all.
So how do you break through that clutter then?
You don't, is the way that it typically ends up going. A lot of people, they'll just, you play for so long, or stream, I should say, for so long, that your community grows and then you become more recognized because you're higher up on the list. Or the alternative is you don't grow on Twitch and you go through another platform. It's one of the reasons I do videos aside from just liking to make the video content is on YouTube, the ceiling is really high. So the expectation from people, from you, is really high with quality, being consistent on your content. But if you can kind of fight through that drudgery and get big enough, you can bring that follower base over to Twitch and you can grow on Twitch a lot quicker and a lot more consistently and not be self-reliant on Twitch. The only downside is YouTube's a huge fight, but it's discoverable. So it's a lot simpler over time to get more people following you because I'm not on YouTube right now, but someone can still find my video. Someone can still like me, subscribe, whatever. So you just have that discoverability to fight against. And though the ceiling's high, if you put the effort in, it's a lot simpler to get a follower base over there and then bring it over to Twitch.
That makes sense. Definitely having an archive of stuff it helps for sure. Because like if the only time people can see you is when you're live, that takes a lot of your time. Because like streaming is almost a job in itself, and it's crazy to think that how much dedication and time you're able to put into streaming. And it's not you're not really getting, like, you're getting paid to do it. You're not really getting paid to do it. Like, it's not your full time job like a lot of these guys. So that takes a lot of dedication that like most people just couldn't do. And then on top of that, you're doing YouTube videos. I mean, it takes a certain kind of hustle and personality to be able to continually do that. And when no one talks about it, go ahead.
I was just going to say, or no life, that helps too.
Well, like, no one talks about how there's no, you get nothing in return for the first little bit. You're just doing it to no one at first until you start building that fan base. And like, that could be so diminishing or demoralizing to a lot of people.
Yeah, it takes years. You look at a lot of the big Twitch streamers and most of these people either only got big because they've been hustling for 6 years. Since Justin TV was a thing, which was what, 2014, somewhere around there, and that's how they got big, is just they grew over the whole course of the span, or on top of that, they're big from something else. So they've been, you know, doing it for at least 2 years, as well as, you know, maybe they were big on Vine or they were big on Twitter or something, and then they brought that follower base over. So it takes years to get big enough to really see anything out of it. So you might get, you know, make a few bucks that you can buy a little piece of equipment with or something, but to make it sustainable, you're talking years for most people. Or, you know, you get lucky and you get a good follower base or hit a good game or something and take off, and then problem then is now you have to maintain it, because that when you're flash in the pan, or you grow really quickly, sorry, you could become a flash in the pan if you just happen to hit that one good game or something. And that's also part of the difficulty behind it, is once you're growing, like it's you have to maintain it is a big thing, and it can be annoying when it appears like you're not. You can get those flashes where a game was really popular and then all of a sudden you're streaming for less people, or your videos are getting less views, and it can be very hard to realize, like, oh, I'm not, like, I haven't grown as big as I thought yet. Like, I need to, you know, keep working at it, but it's not as big as it seemed like it was, or, you know, I still got to keep fighting on.
How do you deal with those lows?
You just keep, put your head down, next project. That's how I deal with it. And a lot of people have different ways to deal with it. Some people don't deal with it and they get into a death spiral. But for me, it's just worry about the next project or the next stream. Or, you know, if I'm playing a game that doesn't just seem to be doing well and I'm not necessarily enjoying it as much anymore, you just switch it up. Try something else for a little bit. I'm a variety streamer, so it kind of helps. I play every stream's a different game each week. So I don't quite see the lows of, say, like playing a bad game for a long time or anything like that. So a lot of times it's just the next stream might be better because it's a game that people are more interested in. But a lot of it's just put your head down, go to the next project. That's at least how I get by with it.
No, that's solid advice. I think that's how it is for a lot of stuff, like especially in the arts. You have to almost love the process more than the end result, or you're going to get burnt out pretty quick.
Yeah, and that's, I think, partly also one of the harder things with streaming is there's not as much process. Like, YouTube videos are like a lot of other arts where you spend so much time for an end result that is so minimal. So a simple 5-minute video could end up taking, you know, 5 hours or 6 hours or however long, depending on what it is. Whereas streaming, it's you sit down and you can do some ahead of time, like, you know, do some testing and configuring some settings. But for the most part, it's you sit down, you're on, you know, you're doing your thing for X period of time, and then it ends. So it's a one-to-one creative process almost. Time you put in is exactly what the time it is. And that also helps. Or doesn't help, sorry, but that also is part of the difficulty behind it, is you're constantly on for the camera the entire time you're doing it. And as people are coming in and out and talking to you, you're constantly, I don't want to say playing the part, but playing the part. So you're constantly on the entire time.
Absolutely, and that's exhausting. I don't think people realize how exhausting that is, and it takes a certain individual, and it's a skill that you have to work on. Did you feel that came naturally to you?
No, but also, well, I guess I could say yes. I didn't put any thought into it, but that's kind of partially the way I was. I mean, in school, I did a lot of speech stuff. I did extemporaneous speaking, and I did a lot of speech and in front of people things, projects and all that. So I kind of just, I think, developed it without knowing, just through the school process and what all I did in school, different leadership roles and all that. So I think it just developed from that. So I'd say it didn't come easy to me, but I didn't have to put more effort in now than, say, I might have had to. A lot of it, I think I put the effort in a long time ago.
That's cool. You were prepared, I guess. I mean, did you always think you were going to stream, or was this sort of just fall into your lap as technology changed and Twitch became more popular?
Oh, no, it just fell into my lap. A lot of it's just being in that space for so many years, computer world, the tech world, I've, like I said, I remember Justin TV popping up, and I was like, I don't know what this is. And then as it's developed, it was like, oh, this is interesting. Well, maybe I'll try it. And that failed a couple of times until this last time where it was like, okay, I'm going to actually try it. Really try it.
Yeah, and you've stuck to your guns, and not only that, but you've really, in a short period of time, you've really like upgraded in the quality and the content itself. Like you've really found your footing, it seems, and you seem like any other big streamer at this point.
Well, I don't know. It keeps changing. That's just the gearhead side of me, where it's like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to keep trying to do it better, and it's not done yet. I still have upgrades ready to go.
I mean, that's a good mentality to have, though. At least you're serious about it. I think that's why people gravitate to you because they see that. I think less important than having something that's polished is the per individual having the commitment to want to deliver the best they can with whatever they have. People will wait for you to improve, and they'll even help you by like donating and stuff if they see that you're really in it and you're truly passionate, which you are, and it comes across when you stream.
Well, a lot of that comes back to the same concept of streaming, sitting in a room with someone talking. And p viewers can tell very quickly if someone's not in the mood or doesn't care or just, is just there doing it. And that's not someone you want to gravitate to or have a conversation with typically. They just kind of feel out of place and they'll just leave. And that just kind of goes with how Twitch streaming is. And streaming in general is if you don't have the attitude, it's just not gonna really work. I mean, maybe there's a niche for you, but you kind of just have to be approachable, I guess, is the big thing.
That's fair. There's so many platforms since Twitch has come out that are trying to compete with what Twitch does. Mixer, I know, is Facebook Live, and there's YouTube Live now, YouTube Gaming. What made you gravitate towards Twitch, and what are your thoughts on the other platforms?
So Twitch, the big reason to gravitate towards Twitch is the streaming platform. It's and really when I've been looking at it, especially back when I initially tried a couple times, Twitch was the only platform in essence, and only recently has other platforms really tried seriously, mainly just Mixer and YouTube. A couple of the other ones I don't think had much bite, and even now. It's looking like Mixer didn't either. Microsoft did their classic, hey, we're going to put effort into something and then stop once we released it. Seems like it kind of went nowhere. But the big one mainly is going to be YouTube. I think it's going to be the biggest competitor because the biggest problem, like I said, on Twitch is there's no discoverability. And they're maybe working on it with the new offline screen, but I'd say still not doing a good job at it. And if they continue, they'll probably eventually fail and lose to someone like YouTube, who, if they put serious effort into their streaming, which they haven't yet, they're probably going to push Twitch out because YouTube has all the benefits Twitch has as far as video capability and the setup for it. Their biggest problem is they just haven't pushed it. They haven't done a good job of separating it from the video side and displaying it properly and putting it forward. It's still kind of wonky, their implementation between like when you're going live, how where you show up, how you show up, like the screen on the right's like super buried down and not very easy to see when someone's streaming or someone's live. So if they pushed it seriously, they'd probably take Twitch out. And if Twitch doesn't do something soon about their discoverability issue, someone will do it for them.
That's well said. I've noticed that people's biggest complaint with Twitch, at least from what I see on Twitter and stuff, is like there's some hypocrisy in the way they discipline some people. Some people get away with like the same thing other people can't get away with. Do you know anything about that?
A little bit. Biggest thing some people also forget is how difficult it is to do that, especially in a platform like Twitch where everything is live and current and nothing's ever exactly the same or identical. And it's really tricky to make stuff appear as even as they probably are trying to make it. And yeah, it's when you have someone like a partner versus, say, someone who's a small streamer, it's definitely a different balance towards things. But at the same time, it's really tricky to make stuff balance. So I think they're trying, but it's such a non-black and white situation every time they go to discipline that I think in the end, it just looks way worse than it might be. But I'm sure, like every platform and every situation, there probably is definitely blatant favoritism towards the people that make them more money. But that's also their choice.
Yeah, you're right. It's a private company. They can do as they please. You're right. I think people forget that often, that they are private, right?
People forget that in general. They always forget that. Yes, the internet's a giant open wild west that, for the most part, is completely free to do what you want or have the setup that you want. And that's a wonderful thing that was given to us by the people from before that had to set up the rules and how the internet would work. And now some people are kind of wanting to challenge that. We'll see what happens there. But people forget because of how open it is that these are companies that we're dealing with. Between Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. And in the end, they do what they want and they're right in doing what they want. And it's hard for us to think that because companies like YouTube that have become so big, you rely on their platform and you rely on the content on their platform. But at the end of the day, if they want to cut, every reference to a certain game on their platform just because they want to, they have the right to. And then we have the right to not use them anymore. And it's tricky for us to remember that yes, they're trying to satisfy us because they want more views, but at the end of the day, if there's something they don't like and they want to take care of it in a way they choose to, it's within their power and it's not a violation of free speech or anything. It's they're a platform from a private company. That they can do it if they want to.
You're absolutely correct. I think people feel that these platforms, because of how large they are and how that they have some kind of responsibility to hold to a certain standard of ethics. But the reality is, like you said, that the investors are trying to appease, and I'm sure they have a narrative too. Whoever's running the company is probably, they're biased. They're all human, so you try your best, but you're still a business, and I think people forget that.
And it's tricky every time they go to make those business decisions because you'll see, videos come out and everything about how there's another adpocalypse or they deleted a bunch of accounts or something happened. It's like, yeah, they're making adjustments probably because, investors are mad or a new system came out. We all know YouTube's not very good at implementing new systems. Every time a new system comes out, it just breaks YouTube for, 2, 3 months until they get the kinks out, and then it's kind of back to normal. So it's always a tricky situation. And that's part of the issue with content creation, where I'm only a part-time content creator, so it's fine for me. I go to a job, I make my money, I'm not reliant on it, but it's very scary for the people who that is their job. That's all they do is content create. And it's, I think those people who it's going to be the biggest impact on whenever they change up the settings. I know with the whole situation that's been going on, ads haven't been worth as much as they used to be. And some content creators are running into issues. Twitch recently, the companies finally got their act together and started DMCA striking people. And it's shaking things up for those who, that's their livelihood. And it's scary for those people. And that's definitely why you should not put all your eggs in one basket and just do content for one place. But I feel for those people.
I was reading about that recently. So, what exactly is going on with the DCMA and the
Oh, just
strikes?
companies finally decided to actually do them. So Twitch, it's difficult for them to handle DMCA. They have tools in place, and they always have. And for the most part, companies didn't really do anything. So Twitch would mute sections of your VOD if it registered against the list of copyright material. And that was, for the most part, all that happened was, unless you were a really big streamer, you pretty much just had to worry about your VOD being muted. But recently, companies actually decided that they were going to wade through clips and stuff and DMCA strike clips on Twitch. So your big, like, Warner and all those guys that hold all the copyrights for these different producers. So, yeah, they finally decided that they were going to do something about it and put a bunch of strikes in. And happens every once in a while. And it's just scary. Twitch kind of is its own little vacuum that's, for the most part, been able to ignore copyright. And whenever the companies clue in and start striking, it kind of shakes up the Twitch community because, like I said, they kind of are their own vacuum and haven't had to deal with copyright, unlike YouTube and stuff where copyright is rampantly taken care of.
Yeah, I'd say absolutely. YouTube's very serious with that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I think a lot of people rely on other content. There's a lot of, like, reacting is huge now, reacting to other content. So I wanted to ask, like, what do you feel is more important at this point? Because it seems like what used to, what I thought was, would draw people to Twitch or individual streamers was that this specific person played this game or did this thing much better than others, and you want to see what it looks like from their perspective. But now that people are just watching YouTube videos and stuff, and that's considered content, or people are reacting to people reacting of people reacting, I wanted to ask your opinion. What do you think is more important, the streamer or the game?
It's going to vary depending on the person. But in general, I think it's the streamer or the YouTube content creator. People might initially come into contact with people due to the game or the topic or whatever it is that person is doing that got them there. On YouTube, could have been recommended the video, or they could have been interested in some tie when they went and searched. But in the end, what keeps people there is going to be the content creator, what that person offers them, whether that is entertainment, which is so prevalent on YouTube with all the different React videos and the different people who do gaming videos. A lot of it's just pure entertainment. But for some, it's education. There's channels I'm subscribed to on YouTube that it's just random facts or random information, because it's both entertainment and education. I learned stuff. Now, whether that'll help me, probably not. It might just make me look like I know way too much, but yeah, it's fun either way. But a lot of it's mainly the content creator, because there's going to be, for every one person doing something, there's probably tens or hundreds or thousands of people doing the same thing. But what typically will make that person stand out is going to be them, whether that's their characteristics, their attention to detail for the production quality or the setup. And a lot of times it's just purely the way they act and what they do. There's a reason that vlogs are so popular. A lot of content creators have realized that they can do really good production value. Like, they could sit there and have great camera setups, great lighting setups, and, like, put a lot of effort into production value. But at the same time, lowering that production quality a bit can almost be better, because going to something like a really good high production vlog setup creates more of a feeling of a one-on-one connection with the viewer and that person. They feel more like they're in the room with them, and that actually has a better value than the full production, because, like I said, a lot of it's that creator. You feel more connected with them.
It feels more authentic, for sure. I mean, you mentioned something earlier, which is, like, people don't realize how much preparation goes into, like, even, like, a five-minute video. Like, some of the videos, my brother is on YouTube as well. He works for a company that does, like, top 10 videos, stuff like that. And the amount of pre-production involved, the preparation involved for, like, a simple 5-minute video is crazy. So I wanted to ask, what's your process? How do you go, like, what goes into your videos? How do you prepare?
Well, I do right now the two different types of videos, and they differ greatly on how they go. We'll start with the news video. That was the first one, which I actually need to finish up after this. So that one's very different because it's a news video. So for the most part, the week goes on and I just collect within a document all the different news sources and all the different news that has happened for Star Citizen throughout the week. As it gets towards the end of the week, Thursday, Friday, I start writing up the script for all the different sources for everything that's going on. And then Friday night or Saturday morning, I'll have the script finished up, depending what my schedule looks like for that weekend. Once the script's written up for that, it simply goes into recording and editing. So reading off the script, recording it, editing the video down, taking all the different news sources and getting, you know, screen grabs, getting videos downloaded and inserted, etc. That one's very straightforward. There's not a lot of thought that goes into it other than the editing part. For the most part, it's just recording everything that happened and then distilling it down to a script that I try to shoot for around 5 minutes because it's a quick video. That one's really straightforward. The other one that I do on Wednesday, those are the ones that are a little more in depth because those are actual substantial videos for like information or entertainment. And those ones have a lot more work because you actually have to have a topic in mind and then a goal for that topic. So those ones usually start with having to get a topic. And that's the trickiest part of content creation, especially video making. Topics are not easy to come by all the time. So sometimes it's a recommendation from a viewer. Sometimes it's something I noticed people keep asking or keep wanting to know about. And then I'll try to make a video on that. And some of it is just what comes across, like all my stuff right now is for Star Citizen. So when I'm playing Star Citizen, what's it's like, oh, I'm doing this. Why am I doing that? Maybe people don't know why. And then make a video out of that. And then that one's way trickier because you have to sit down, write a script, get information if it's information based or something that has facts to it. Or like one I'm working on for hauling is taking forever because I actually have to go do a bunch of hauling and record data, and that takes a long time. And then for those, it's writing out the script and then sitting down for recording, whether that's voiceover style, whether that's like in front of the camera, or the third option, which is in front of the camera in the game and actually doing the recording process.
That's a lot. I don't think people realize the preparation involved. So when someone writes a terrible comment, like this sucks, it's like, man, you have no idea what makes a 5-minute video. And I just think that if people truly understood the involvement to just to present something that just people will often play in the background, like I think they may be a little less likely to be so harsh and dismissive for little things that people often complain about online.
And it's tricky too, though, because at the same time I've seen and I've had like one of my videos, my longest video took the shortest amount of time to make. And it's just astonishing to me because that scale is so weird between what actually takes a long time. And people don't realize the stuff that takes a long time. Because you'd think, oh, he just, you know, sits in front of a camera and he's talking. And it's like some of those may take a lot longer because the information involved, the research involved, all that stuff. And then some of the ones that you'd think would take longer, like, oh, this guy, I haven't done this, but in other games, it's like, oh, this guy built this giant tower inside this game as a cool thing to show off. Sometimes that might have taken a lot less time. Like building the tower might have only taken him an hour in game, and he just had to record, you know, him showing it off versus a guy who sits in front of a camera for what looks like 5 minutes talking about a topic that he had to research 20 hours to find out the answer for the topic.
It's, yeah, for sure. It's, there's just a lot to it. And like, I think, it's a new generation of people that are unbelievably creative. You guys put in a ton of effort, do a ton of research, just, you know, even if not in the topic, just like the editing, the production value is so high, the bar is set so high even for the a beginner streamer or YouTuber, that it's crazy. And I think a lot of you guys, I'm not speaking to you specifically, but a lot of people, they compare themselves to people that are much bigger than them, and they don't realize like how good it already is, even with what they consider lower standards, like it, compared to where it's been, even like 5 or 10 years, it's moved so far, and the bar is set so much higher that what you guys consider like, you know, bottom of the barrel content is still, in my opinion, far superior to what existed like even 5 years ago.
The standards definitely have gone up, and that's part of why I think also some people are drawn towards streaming, is they feel the bar is lower. They're like, okay, I can do this. They look at Twitch streams and stuff. It's like, oh, he's, you know, there's nothing crazy production wise that goes into this. And I mean, in general, the bar is a lot lower in streaming. You have a decent, you know, camera, decent microphone, and you know, you have a game to play, you can get into streaming. But when you look at other content that's flushed out and been around longer, YouTube's been around since what, 2004. Versus Twitch, which was like Justin TV was like 2014, somewhere in there. It's had so much time and so many people are on it that the bar to entry is a lot higher. You need to have better production value to seem somewhat more proficient than it, when it comes down to streaming. But the interesting thing is, you look at the high end of both, and they're both ridiculously high. Like the really big Twitch streamers that have put a lot of effort into their production are just up there with some of these YouTube groups that have put so much effort into production. Big difference being, though, that on Twitch, you can't notice it as much as YouTube, because Twitch bitrate issues and all that. So yeah, can't quite tell if someone's got $1,000 microphone versus on a YouTube video, where you might be able to tell they have $1,000 microphone.
I think it's a valid point. I wanted to ask, this is slightly off topic, but for someone that is inspired by this conversation or is thinking about doing it because they think the bar to entry is low, at least on somewhere like Twitch compared to YouTube, how do you go about picking a game?
There's two philosophies when it comes towards like Twitch streaming or even YouTube, when it comes to like picking a game to play or stream. And either philosophy's wrong. It depends what your end goal is. So if your end goal is to live on stream money, so get big enough on Twitch that you can survive and live on it, when you're picking your game, number one, no matter which option you go with, is you have to be interested in it. If you're not interested in the game and genuinely like intrigued by it, people are going to pick up on that, and they're not going to latch on to you, because no one really wants to watch someone play a game that they're just bored of or not interested in. But on top of that, your second thing is whether or not you're trying to get big. Because if you're trying to get big, you might need a game that's got interest or that people are looking at actively. There's games that are really fun to play that just no one wants to watch a Twitch streamer play, because it's just the nature of the game. The game might be boring and long, and there might be no beat to it for people to watch on a Twitch stream. So there just might be less people to potentially run across you. Now, in the end, it depends if you want to get big and live off the money. If you just want to have fun with Twitch streaming and let it naturally grow and have the end goal of maybe getting there, just play a game that you're interested in, whatever that game ends up being, and just keep playing games that you want to play, that you want to keep engaging with, and it'll just naturally grow that way. Really don't recommend people to try to force themselves to making money off the platform, because a lot of those adjustments towards finding out what people are interested in watching and trying to follow the trends gets really complicated, and a lot of the times it's just a random guess. And then the long run, you could end up burning yourself out trying to overanalyze and overthink things. So it's better just kind of let it naturally grow, in which case just play whatever you're interested in and whatever you find fun. And people will pick up on it. They'll be more engaging with you then.
That's a very thoughtful answer. You play Star Citizen. Are you interested in telling us a little bit about that game? Because like it's very niche, and you are the only person you brought it to my attention, my awareness. So if you seem like one of the best spokesperson, because you're very knowledgeable in the game, and you're really good at articulating the complexities the game has to offer in a way that even a layman can
Yeah,
understand. So would you like to talk about it a little
there's
bit?
lots of great voices when it comes to Star Citizen. It's a wonderful community. But in general with the game, the big thing with Star Citizen is it's an open world game in the biggest of senses. So there's no loading screens, there's no locked frames or anything while it tries to figure out something. It's a completely open exploration game, which is just amazing. In game sense, there's no game that I can tell to that extent that's ever been released, which is partly why that game's still under development because it's massive. But yeah, it's an open world space simulator in essence, where once the development gets further along, you're just a cog in the wheel that is the universe, and that's all you are and all you'll ever be. And that's why it's so much fun because you're not trying to be a hero or trying to be someone big. You're what you want to be. Players can, drop in and be a miner and just go around and mine all the time if they want. Or you can drop in and pretend that you're a bounty hunter and go around hunting bounties. It's massively expansive with even currently there's what, four planets with average about 3 moons apiece, so I think 11. I think it's four planets, 12 moons, and one asteroid that is large that's currently visiting the development cycle, and it's ridiculous. But it is a game that is under development, as a lot of people probably know that have been following it, and it's glitchy and buggy, and we all get mad when they don't release stuff on time. And when stuff's not going quite the way we want. But in the end, it's a wonderful game. The community's excellent. And I just absolutely adore it because you just do whatever you want. Do you fly around in your spaceship, go down on planets, explore, just decide to do a relaxing haul, buying and selling goods. It's whatever you make of it. And I think that's a huge thing is since it's an MMO, like your World of Warcrafts and stuff, and in the end makes the game so enjoyable is that you find a community and you get to play out being part of a community.
I agree with that. I think the community aspect in a lot of games is what makes it as good as it is, because it's especially in quarantine time, it's fun. Like it's fun to be able to play with other players and grow with them and experience these things with them and a chat the take on challenges that you wouldn't otherwise be able to do on your own.
Yeah,
That's a huge
all the
aspect, at least for
fondest
me.
memories I have of any MMO, mainly World of Warcraft, because I haven't done too many other ones. But all the different MMOs I've tried, the parts I remember are not really the specific things in game. They just tend to be tangential to the thing I remember, which is what we did together, like the fun we had. I think back to like Throne of Thunder and World of Warcraft, which is when I was the biggest in raiding. Yeah, I remember certain fights, but I usually remember like our reaction to it or the stupid thing we did or that big accomplishment. Like when we finally killed the final boss of Throne of Thunder, the fact that our final kill, our actual first kill, was a dot kill. And I just find it, I remember it because it's not so much that we killed him, which was amazing, but it's the fact we killed him with dots and the fact we wiped but still got the kill. So it's, yeah, it's just there's a whole
It
group
makes the victory that much sweeter.
that buildup of adrenaline and stuff as you're downing the boss, and then that just release of endorphins when you do it in the stupidest manner possible. So it's all that community aspect behind it that I remember the most, and the game usually just ties into that how it was relative. So the fact it was the big buyout final boss of Throne of Thunder didn't matter as much as it was the fun of all of us laughing it off and enjoying it.
So if people want to, if they hear this and they're excited to try an MMO and that MMO so happens to be Star Citizen, how can they find you so they could play with you if they want to play with you when you're streaming or anything else?
12:30 a.m. Eastern and Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Friday for Twitch streaming at twitch.tv/unfitchaos. And then when I'm not streaming, they can catch me on YouTube, and it's just Unfit Chaos on YouTube as well. The best way to talk to me is my Discord, which there's links both on Twitch and YouTube to get me a Discord. I'm not the best at Twitter yet. I'm really bad at Twitter, but they can find me on Twitter and probably message me. I just am not very good at making tweets. I need to fix that.
It's okay. I will provide all the links also in this episode, description of this episode. Is there anything else you wanted to mention
before we part? Thanks for having me on, I guess. I'm not very good at talking randomly about stuff. I hope people enjoyed listening to my very small story, and I appreciate you for having me on.
Man, it was, I'd have to say you were probably my best guest yet. You seem so natural. And when you go on like tangents, your passion really shows. And I think that's really all I wanted to do with this. This gives me an excuse to have people share their passions with me, because I'm so interested in when people are truly passionate about something, as you are about streaming and making games, and it shows when you do it. But really, this is my selfish way of getting people like you to talk to me for a longer period of time. So I want to thank you for being on.
And interviews.
It's essentially, like, it's harder to get people to have this long form conversation with you, unless you're like, as a result, you'll be in front of so many people.
To help you out too. So.
Absolutely. I'm grateful. Thank you. Cool. So thank you, man. I appreciate that.